Hello and welcome to Bread and Thread, a podcast about food and domestic history. I'm Liz.
And I'm Hazel. We are two friends who studied archaeology together and who love history and making things. And we like to start talking about what we have been making, historical things or not. So what have you been making and or baking recently?
But I didn't have an active project because we've started packing stuff.
Oh no, you're but, in the zone where you can't start things.
Well, we were, and then we decided that it made me too sad, so I've started just crocheting a corner-to-corner blanket, just using up bits of my stash.
That is a wise choice.
But I did finish my York Stitch hat, so that made me happy.
Yes. Excited for that one.
I have posted it to you.
Thank you. Can't wait to try it on.
Yeah, I tried it on. My head is a bit bigger than yours, but when I tried it on, it fitted a little bit tightly, so that should be okay. And it also made it look like I was dressed as an acorn.
Ah! Oh! Okay, well, depending on how it fits on me, it may be gnomecore. And I enjoy that.
Expecting it to be quite so pointy, but the stitch is a little bit taller than the Oslo stitch that I used for my first attempt at an ulbind hat. So it just ended up pointier. But I learned something, so that's okay.
Good.
What have you been up to?
I made hot cross buns.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because it is Easter here in the UK. It was good. Turns out I was making them at my aunt and uncle's place. And it turns out their fridge is a lot colder than my fridge. So they didn't rise. I did like an overnight rise, second rise, so that I could bake them fresh in the morning without getting up at like 4 a.m.
Makes sense.
Yeah, but their fridge is too cold, so they didn't rise very much. But it was fine. They were slightly small buns, but everything else turned out fine. Yeah, that was good. I love making them fresh because it makes me feel so like springtime, and then also your hands smell like hot cross bun, which is the most nostalgic thing. So yeah, that was a good time.
That's a good smell.
I also made some wild garlic pesto.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was real good. I used walnuts instead of pine nuts. Because I couldn't find pine nuts, and also they're really expensive and they come in tiny packets here. I don't know if that's just like a this country thing or like where you, I don't know. Anyone who's got any good sources for pine nuts, hit me up.
I feel like they're mostly sold for like sprinkling on salads.
Yeah. But anyway, it was delicious. Anyway, there's a little hill. At the top of the hill where we live, there's a little wood. And I went looking for wild garlic in there because we are relatively recently moved to this area, and I didn't know any of my usual spots to collect things. It's been disorientating for me, so I went up to this wood and I was like, oh, it's like a wood in a valley, like a really small little valley. There's got to be some in here. It's going to be damp and stuff, and it's forested, which is like where it likes to grow. So I went all through this little wood looking, and I found a tiny patch, but I was like, that I don't know if I should take it from there because it's only really small. And then I hit the jackpot on like the very northern edge of this wood along a path. There was just like so much along the bank. So yeah, I got myself a decent fistful, and I made some delicious wild garlic pesto, and then we've been having that in like sandwiches and with pasta. And we had like toasted rolls with mozzarella and tomato and well, garlic pesto. Ah, it was just chef's kiss. Anyway, so yeah, I've been having a good time traipsing around the woods and creating foods. Yeah. So what are we talking about this episode? Is it something wholesome and cottagecore?
How do you feel about whale excrement?
I don't know enough to say that it isn't wholesome. What is its use?
Perfume and also eating.
Okay.
So, just to clarify, I'm not actually talking about whale poo.
Okay.
Which is what you normally associate with the word excrement, but it's another thing that is excreted, which is ambergris.
Okay, I've heard this word many times, but I knew it was whale related, but I didn't actually know what it was. That is fascinating.
Ambergris, which is French for grey amber. Surprisingly, comes from sperm whales. Basically, the theory is, because obviously it's not an animal that is in captivity, so we can't study its digestion that well.
Mm-hmm.
But the predominant theory is that when whales eat something, like say a squid, mm-hmm. the beaks irritate it, and then the bile duct creates this substance that coats it, and it becomes this foul-smelling, greyish, yellowish lump.
Okay.
The other theory is that it's more of a blockage, kind of coalesces in the colon.
Oh.
And then comes out after the whale dies. We don't really know for sure. But either way, it's a thing that can be collected on beaches and can weigh up to 455 kilos, which is apparently, according to the Whale and Dolphin according to the Whales and Dolphins Conservation, the charity that used to be called WDCS, if you've heard of them, was found in 1913 in Australia. But it's found all over the place. A kilo lump was found on Anglesey not that long ago.
Okay, I had it down in my mind as this sort of exotic substance. But I didn't realise you can find it all over.
Mostly the Atlantic coast. Yeah, it has been found in the Bahamas as well. And there's actually a place in Belize called Ambergris Cay, because that used to be used by whalers. Specifically hunting sperm whales, which are the ones that produce ambergris.
So, it sounds kind of gross, if I'm honest. How does that make its way into perfume and also edible things?
Okay. So, one of the earliest mentions that I could find was from Ibn Hokal, who was a Muslim trader in the 10th century, who said that it was used as an aphrodisiac. Because everything is an aphrodisiac somewhere at some point. So I guess it makes that transition from medicine to food, as a lot of things have done.
Mm-hmm.
And we find the same civilizations using it at this time as an aphrodisiac also use it as an incense, which is interesting because I've seen the smell compared to moss, which isn't too bad, or a barnyard, or an armpit.
Okay.
But I guess mixed reviews.
I've never smelled burning moss, so I don't know whether that's bad or not, but yeah.
But apparently it produces really nice sort of basal notes in perfumes, things like musk, tobacco, and a general sort of ocean smell get attributed to it quite often.
So mixed with other things, it smells good.
Yeah, and it was also a preservative for perfumes. Like Marie Antoinette had a perfume that had ambergris in it as a combination fragrance and preservative.
Okay.
Because it helps to stabilize some of the more volatile fragrance oils, I think.
Interesting.
I didn't find an exact explanation, but that's kind of what I gathered.
That kind of sounds like it's like, all right, boys, calm down.
Almost, yeah. So we find it in 15th century Persia, in a recipe for a marinade for dried meat, along with saffron and rose water. So I wonder if, again, it's this kind of general preserving quality.
That does make a little sense.
Then we get, just a little bit later, we get people like Hannah Woolley and Anne Fanshawe using it in recipes, particularly for ice cream.
Okay.
Hannah Woolley using it is really interesting, though, because her recipes are, a lot of her work is more middle class than upper class.
So presumably the people that she's writing for have some way to get ambergris.
Yeah, I've read some things suggesting maybe it was more common in the 17th century because whales were more common.
Mm.
But still not so common that it's an ingredient for normal people.
Okay. It's a special occasion, break out the ambergris.
So in 1650 we have Traite de Confitures by François Pierre de La Varenne. You can probably guess he is French.
That's a good name.
Is combining ambergris with musk and then using that as a fragrance and flavoring for essentially sweets. So sugar paste, pastels, candied fruit, marzipan, and even something that sounds like it's quite similar to custard. Huh. Like an ambergris custard.
Whale custard.
Whale custard. And as I said, Lady Anne Fanshawe has an ice cream recipe which has orange flower water and ambergris.
Just those, okay.
Well, also sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently helped to alter the freezing point, so you got a creamier consistency as well as adding flavour. Mm-hmm. So essentially, where we would use salt in ice cream to change the freezing point, she uses ambergris.
Oh, wow.
Which, I mean, I guess that works with the concentrated ocean that I found one person saying it tastes like. Because the ocean is salty, I guess.
Yeah. I guess if you don't happen to have any salt, just use some whale secretions.
Yeah. But it's been used in food relatively recently. There's a Sicilian chocolatier in 2013 found a Grimaldi recipe from the 18th century, Grimaldi being a family of chocolatiers, quite a well-respected one,
okay,
that used ambergris and deer musk in their chocolate.
Oh, wow. I'm struggling to imagine how that would taste. Did they make this recipe? The modern chocolatier?
They did. So this recipe would have been a drinking chocolate, but then they made a solid chocolate. But I haven't been able to find any reviews of this stuff.
No.
Just people casually mentioning that it happened.
That means it's either the best thing ever, or it was so bad that no one ever wanted to speak of it again.
It does seem to have always had some level of status to it. Because we also have the story of Charles II enjoying eggs and ambergris.
Oh, right.
Although I've also seen that attributed to James I, so I don't know. It's one of those things that might be true, or it might be look at the rich people that's been applied to multiple people.
I suppose, or like one of those, I guess, marketing things almost, where there's a legend attached to a certain dish that, like, this was so and so's favorite.
But yeah, if we get a little bit more modern, we have it being used in some cigarettes, particularly in Egypt, as a scenting agent.
Okay, and so now you can smoke the whale as well.
Smoke the whale would be a great tagline.
Smoke the whale sounds like a euphemism for something. Like, just, he's been coming back so late recently. I'm starting to suspect he might be smoking.
And yeah, there's also a bar in Chicago that had an ambergris cocktail.
Oh, of course there is. There's got to be a cocktail. I mean, if there's also alcohol in it, I suppose I wouldn't mind.
I feel like I would still mind, but also I don't drink, so maybe...
Oh, I don't know. I imagine
maybe if you'd
mind.
Already had a few. But yeah, I found
someone hands you this saying, like, it's got a whale in it. You're like,
I found an article from 2013 about Billy Sunday, a cocktail bar in Chicago, that has, you know, all sorts of unusual ingredients in there, like they make their own syrups and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these cocktails has ambergris.
Wow.
So it's a cocktail of rye, brandy, ambergris flavoured sugar, and orange bitters.
Oh. I suppose, like, that doesn't sound the worst. Like, ocean flavours and orange and...
The one where the person is talking about ocean flavors describes it as a ocean demi-glace. And said that the cocktail was well balanced and delicious.
Okay.
A definite briny essence. And it was a little bit viscous.
Oh.
But overall, yeah, apparently that's a nice cocktail.
I'm not sure how viscous is too viscous.
People drink cocktails that have cream in.
Yeah.
I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, but also I'm not willing to try it, even if I did drink.
I wonder where they get it from. Like, is it more difficult to get nowadays?
It is illegal to possess or trade in the US, so I'm not entirely sure where they get it. Presumably there's some way to legally get hold of it with forms or something.
Yeah, I guess. But can you buy it from another country where...
Well, you'd still be possessing it, though.
Yeah, well, I wonder how you get around that.
It's also banned for import and export in Australia. You can't own or possess it in India. In the UK and EU, it's fine, though, because it's classed as a waste product. Because
right.
Because you're not harvesting it from the whales, you're just finding it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I guess there's no need to, like, destroy any whales or habitat if you just find it on the beach.
So, under the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Flora and Fauna, it's perfectly legal to possess and to then sell online, which is what a lot of people do when they find it, because it's worth a lot. Like, the 1 kilo lump that was found on Anglesey sold for several thousand pounds.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, there was a 280-pound piece found in Yemen, which sold at $1.5 million, so it's worth a lot.
I'm just trying to look up, like, where I can buy that and how much it is.
Do you want to make the cocktail?
I'm just like, if it's legal here, I could reasonably make that cocktail. I'm probably not going to, but just out of curiosity. Oh my gosh, it's available on Etsy.
See? On Etsy.
Oh, wow. 1 gram is being sold for £110.
That sounds about right. But you don't need a lot of it for the cocktail because you're just infusing its flavour into palm sugar.
You can get it as an essential oil.
I mean, that makes sense if it's used in perfume, though, right? Just mix it with some other oils.
Yeah, I guess. Oh my goodness. Okay, does this actually have ambergris in it? Someone is selling it as part of, like, a love potion.
Yeah. We're in full circle.
Oh gosh. Right. Yeah. It turns out it's readily available as long as you've got the cash and live in the UK.
I was looking on eBay out of curiosity, and there are people selling ambergris flavoured perfumes. Not flavoured. Although maybe. So yeah, that's ambergris.
Wow, thank you.
I hope it was an adequate episode 101.
It was. I have learned much. I just had it in my head as, like, I guess I'm used to reading about it in, like, historical related realms, but I always thought it was this, like, really fancy thing that was like super expensive, and but I guess it is, but I didn't realize.
But I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I learned what it actually is from an episode of Bob's Burgers where the A plot is the children find some on a beach and then try to sell it illegally.
Fantastic.
They should have put it in the burgers. Clearly. If we've learned anything from today.
I could have made a fortune.
RBG ideas should be good, right? But what this podcast supposes is, maybe they don't have to be. The Probably Bad Podcast brings you ideas like dire humans fight your GM in real life. And what if there is an eye laser man? Listen to the Probably Bad Podcast, available everywhere podcasts exist, and some places where they don't.
So what is today's local larder?
I'm glad that I know that. it doesn't really have anything to do with Wales. Because, like, we've already done, like, a few episodes that we've recorded around Easter time, we've done on, like, Easter-related local larders or, like, traditions, and I was kind of thinking, like, okay, what else is out there? And this time of year is also Nowruz, which is the Persian New Year. Which is a big festival based around the spring equinox that is traditionally celebrated in Iran, but also across Central Asia. There's a lot to say about it. But in the interests of local larder, I found like a particular food that is served during Nowruz traditionally quite interesting.
What is it? We've done a Nowruz one before, I think.
We may have. I can't remember exactly what it was though, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't this. So my local larder for today is kuku sabzi.
What is that?
So it is a egg-based dish with lots of fresh herbs. It's kind of like an omelette, except that there is much more like herb than egg in it.
Okay, so like just herbs bound together with egg kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like a Spanish tortilla, but like, yeah, but much more other ingredient than egg. The egg is just like a binder.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it looks really tasty. I'm gonna send you a picture. Also for the Tumblr.
Oh, that is very green.
Yeah, super green. So because the Festival of Nowruz takes place at the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere, it's like the dish includes a lot of like fresh herbs that are available around this time. So one recipe that I found includes a lot of parsley and coriander and dill, as well as like spices. Sometimes you can have saffron in it, apparently, if you're feeling fancy or it's a special occasion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's traditionally made on the stovetop, apparently, by like mixing the ingredients together and then like cooking it and then flipping it over, sort of like a Spanish tortilla. But you can also make it in the oven by like baking, and it can be served with like yogurt and bread, or like as a side dish. And yeah, it looks really nice. There are also other kinds of cuckoo. So cuckoo is like the umbrella dish. It's like an egg-based dish with lots of things in it. And sabzi is the herbs. And like there are various other versions. Like you can have it with like potato or cauliflower. You can have like different spices like saffron, turmeric, other things. You can have aubergine in it, or it could include barberries, which are traditionally named zireshk.
So you can do a lot with it then?
Yeah, you can. I think it's one of those things that's like, whatever you've got, you know, you can make it into a cuckoo. Which I've also just realised, I don't think I've ever had a barberry before. But they're very popular in Persian cooking, apparently.
Interesting. I've never heard of them.
Yeah, they're like a like sweet and sour kind of taste, apparently.
Okay, definitely want to try these.
Yeah, me too. So yeah, all in all, sounds great. Cuckoo sabzi apparently is known since at least the 18th century from cookbooks that have survived from that period in Iran. And while it's traditionally served at Nowruz now, it can also be eaten, or different types of cuckoo can be eaten like around the year. And in the 18th century cookbooks, it's introduced as like a side dish. But I guess depending on what you make it with, it could also be a main. Yeah, so I will link a recipe on the Tumblr if anyone wants to try it.
I mean, I would like to try it.
Yes.
Cool. So
I think that was all I was going to say about that.
So yes, we are indeed on Tumblr at Bread and Thread. If you want things that we talk about on the episodes, we often do additional posts, reblogging things, teasers from upcoming episodes, things like that. And you can also send us questions there, or episode suggestions, whatever you like, really.
Or if you don't want to use Tumblr, you can email us at breadandthreadpodcast@gmail.com with your episode suggestions or your places to get pine nuts or potentially ambergris.
And if you want to support us and donate to Hazel's eventual obtaining of ambergris.
No, I don't care how much anyone gives me, I'm not making the cocktail.
You can go to patreon.com/breadandthread and get access to monthly recipes and a Discord server where we just sort of hang out and talk about things that we are making and baking.
So thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next time.